BakerBots, LLP, provides podcasts for educational purposes only. They are not legal advice and are not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship. This communication may constitute attorney advertising.
Welcome to the Environmental Evolutions Podcast, where we explore the changing landscape of environmental law and policy. I'm your host, Megan Burge, coming to you from the great state of California. In today's episode, I turn the mic over to my partner from our DC offices, Sterling Marchand. Sterling is going to provide a rundown on landmark climate risk disclosure regulations issued by the Securities and Exchange Commission and the numerous lawsuits challenging them. Some of you may remember Sterling from our prior Fast Facts episode on the proposed version of the regulations. And if not, you can find a link to the episode, as well as Sterling's contact information and a primer on the final regulations in today's episode notes. So with those logistics out of the way, I'll let Sterling get on with the show.
Thanks, Megan. It's good to be back. It's been 2 years since the SEC first put out its proposed rules, and after tens of thousands of comments and hyper-intense public attention, the SEC voted 3-2 to publish the final rule requiring certain public companies to make climate-related disclosures. Now, there's over 800 pages in the final published rule. There's been a lot of commentary on what's been out of the final rules. I worry that if we focus too much on what's out, we lose sight on what's in. And there's a lot that's in. And even though many companies are doing some form of this already voluntarily, the amount of detail that is in this final rule, including the fact that the SEC is going to require attestation, it means that this reporting process is going to be fraught with legal peril. So focusing on what's out is a bit like Indiana Jones dodging poisonous darts and wiping his brow only to find himself looking down at a pit of poisonous snakes. What the final rules require can be broken up into a few buckets, and that's the greenhouse gas or GHG emissions reporting, a company's climate goals, a company's climate risks, and the financial impact. So starting with the greenhouse gas emissions reporting, the final rules require accelerated filers, and that excludes emerging growth companies and small reporting companies, as well as large accelerated filers, to disclose the registrant's direct greenhouse gas emissions, that's scope one emissions, and indirect greenhouse gas emissions from the purchase of electricity or other forms of energy. That's what's commonly referred to as scope two emissions. Now, all of that reporting, scope one and scope two emissions, is subject to a materiality standard. And in the final rule, the SEC noted and adopted a traditional notion of materiality. So it's not going to be based solely on the amount of the emissions. In some ways, that is a positive. That's a win that gives a little bit more clarity. But on the other hand, it doesn't. So the SEC tried to give additional clarity on what materiality is going to look like. The SEC did go on and tried to provide some examples of circumstances that could factor into investors' decision-making or may inform the materiality assessment for greenhouse gas emissions. And this includes whether, for example, the registrant is subject to methane fees imposed by the EPA, or if the company is subject to the requirements or required to report greenhouse gas emissions under some foreign or state law. And as an example of some of those, the SEC cited California's recently adopted Climate Corporate Data Accountability Act and the EU's Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive. This is an important aspect of the rule because it's going to determine whether or not a company ultimately has to report scope one and scope two emissions. Now, for certain companies, they're likely going to find that their emissions are material. But for companies in other sectors, technology, transportation, aerospace, defense, it may be a closer question. Now, citing California's law is interesting to me because California's law is actually not based on any analysis of materiality. California's law is based solely on volume of commerce and annual revenues and whether or not a company is doing business in the state of California. In other words, just by virtue of having done $500 million worth of business annually and having transacted some business in California, a company is required to make certain disclosures about climate-related risks in the state of California. That tells me nothing about whether or not their Scope 1 or Scope 2 emissions are in fact material. And yet the SEC in the final rule is saying, if you are subject to the California reporting requirement, that would weigh in favor of finding materiality and reporting here. If a registrant is required to make Scope 1 and Scope 2 emission disclosures after finding that they are material, then the emissions have to be disclosed on an aggregate basis. In other words, they can't factor in carbon offsets or any other renewable energy credits to offset or to downplay the total number of emissions. The final rules also require disclosure of the method that the registrant uses, but does not necessarily require that one method be used. And so the operations that a registrant considers as owned or operated for the purpose of calculating greenhouse gas emissions may not conform to the organizational boundaries used in the registrant's consolidated financial statements. If they materially differ, then the registrant must provide an explanation of this difference. The other aspect to the greenhouse gas emissions reporting is the accounting standards. Whatever you choose, you're going to have to disclose that methodology. You're going to have to disclose whatever inputs or assumptions went into that methodology and how that led to your output in terms of the Scope 1 and Scope 2 emissions. You're also permitted to disclose reasonable estimates as long as you disclose the fact that it is an estimate and, again, disclose the underlying assumptions. So unlike the proposed rules, there's not a sole focus on the greenhouse gas protocol. There is a greater ability for companies to select their own accounting standards, but they are still going to have to make those disclosures, but this will result in some inconsistency. The last aspect I want to touch on in terms of the greenhouse gas emissions reporting is the attestation requirement. And after a transition period, the SEC is going to require third-party attestation for Scope 1 and Scope 2 disclosures. There's a wide variety of attestation methods that can be used, but ultimately it has to be provided by someone who meets certain independence, expertise, and other requirements. Different filers will have to provide different levels of attestation in terms of limited assurance or reasonable assurance. That at a very high level covers the greenhouse gas emissions reporting. And as you can tell, it's going to be much more than simply reporting Scope 1 and Scope 2 emissions. The next bucket that the final rule covers is climate-related targets and goals. And these rules mandate disclosure of any climate-related targets and goals if material to the registrant's business, results of operations, or financial condition. So in other words, many companies out there have been setting climate goals to be net zero by a certain year, for example, or to shift to greater sustainability as part of overall ESG efforts. The SEC is now looping these in to the disclosure process and requiring in 10Ks, in the annual reports, additional disclosure. And what that disclosure is going to be is very specific. It includes the scope of the activity. It includes the emissions, the specific emissions that are included in the target. It includes a defined time horizon by which the target is expected to be achieved. You have to disclose the baseline, how the company intends to meet the goal, and the company will have to disclose its progress towards that goal. Because this is going into an annual report that is signed as being true, there will be additional risk So companies will have to reevaluate their ESG goals, how they measure them, and how they disclose them. This may have a negative impact on companies' ESG goal setting, because by requiring these goals to be put into a report that is signed and certified, it will change the way that companies set those targets and goals. A company will also have to explain whether or not carbon offsets or renewable energy credits are going to be used as part of reaching that goal. Now, the final rules extend certain safe harbor provisions to these types of climate-related disclosures in the sense that they pertain to transition plans, targets, goals. The safe harbor basically says that if you make a mistake or a reasonable mistake, then the SEC will not fault you for having provided false information. So notably, the Scope 1 and Scope 2 emissions disclosures do not fall under this safe harbor. And the SEC noted that it may at the future time assess whether or not it makes sense to amend or remove the safe harbor from these provisions. The next bucket in the final rules that I wanted to discuss are climate-related risk, impacts, and governance disclosure. And this is a wide array of information that the SEC is going to require companies to disclose, all related to climate-related risk and impacts to the company. Essentially, the SEC is going to require a company to disclose any climate-related risks that have materially impacted the company or are reasonably likely to have a future material impact on the company, including the company's business strategy, results of operations, or financial condition. And this includes whether those are physical risks or transition risks. And then they have to be categorized as whether they're likely to manifest in the short term, the next 12 months, or the long term, which is a year or more. This might include things like increased cost to a company's business as a result of regulations or climate-related litigation. And on the physical side, it might include damage to infrastructure from climate-related weather events. In addition to these risks and impacts, the final rule requires disclosure of the company's climate governance framework. And what that means is the SEC is looking for a company to disclose whether and how the company's board has oversight of these climate-related risks, transition plans, and goals. And it's also looking for disclosure of the management's role in assessing and managing climate-related risks, including management positions and committees, individuals' expertise, processes by which the management assesses and manages those risks, and as well as how those processes are integrated into overall risk management systems. So this is much more than what's been done in the past. The SEC is looking for real, concrete ways that both the board of directors and the management are addressing climate-related risks and climate goals, and for that to be put into the company's disclosure statements filed with the SEC. The fourth bucket that I want to touch on in terms of the final rules are climate-related items in financial statements. And this, again, is very specific and detailed in terms of what will be required to be disclosed. And it includes things like the cost of severe weather events and natural conditions. The SEC provides guidance and requirements around how these are to be calculated, including how to attribute a cost, expenditure, charge, loss, or recovery that is due to a severe weather event or other natural condition. In other words, if a natural disaster or a climate-related disaster has a financial impact, the company will have to calculate that amount and disclose it. It's important to note, however, that a registrant is not necessarily required to determine that a particular weather event was caused by climate change. Instead, the disclosure requirements talk about material impacts on financial estimates and assumptions and require disclosures in those events. The final rules also require disclosure in the financial statements of the costs around the use of carbon offsets and renewable energy credits if the company uses those as a material component in its plan to meet climate-related targets or goals. Finally, the SEC final rule requires that notes to the financial statements must also disclose whether estimates and assumptions used to prepare the consolidated financial statements were materially impacted by risks and uncertainties related to severe weather events and other natural conditions, or any climate-related target or transition plans. The SEC is basically requiring companies to disclose information surrounding severe weather events that impact the company without requiring the companies to determine that those were climate-related, and will allow the public to determine whether or not and how that information should be interpreted. The SEC has indicated that the final rules will become effective within 60 days and that the first disclosures for large accelerated filers will be for fiscal year 2025 in the 10K annual report due in March 2026. That means that if these rules go into effect as expected or as the SEC would expect, companies that are large accelerated filers will need to be tracking this information next year, 2025, to be disclosed in March of 2026. That is not that much time. The SEC keeps saying there's 2 years to implement this. That's 2 years to report it. There's really 8 months to put the systems and processes into place to begin tracking this January 1, 2025 for disclosure in March 2026. There are different phase-in periods for different requirements. The attestation is going to be further out, and the most immediate requirements are on the large accelerated filers. But all companies that are going to be subject to these rules need to start thinking about these now. But, and there is a big but, that is all subject to the litigation. There are at least 9 cases filed, largely focused on the SEC's ability and authority to implement these rules, that they shouldn't have removed the requirements to disclose Scope 3 emissions, and that more than 97% of the investors who commented on the rule wanted Scope 3 emission disclosures. So the SEC is in the middle of all this. They have elected to enter into a lottery to have a court of appeals selected, to have all of these cases consolidated, and late last week, the 8th Circuit was selected. The 5th Circuit had entered a preliminary administrative stay, but with the 8th Circuit being selected as the venue for all of this litigation to be consolidated, the 5th Circuit lifted its preliminary administrative stay. I won't go into much more detail about the litigation because it's literally changing day by day. Suffice to say, there's more to come. But as I noted, companies would be mistaken if they did not take steps now to begin to prepare to do so. A recent report estimated that more than half of CFOs are not ready to measure ESG outcomes and report metrics. And 2/3 of CFOs that are likely covered by these rules have no plan or are just beginning to plan to comply with the SEC's proposed rules. So, Megan, I've already taken up more than my allotted time. There's a lot going on here. We'll continue to track the litigation as it unfolds. We'll continue to report back as changes happen to these rules. And if there's any other major news surrounding this, we'll certainly report it. But in the meantime, my strong recommendation is for companies to start looking at this, start thinking about and planning for a way to implement this, because it's going to require a top-to-bottom assessment. It's going to require a fundamental shift in the way that companies do business unless and until these rules get recalled.
A huge thank you to Sterling for taking the mic today. I'm Megan Burge. Thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you for listening to this BakerBots podcast. BakerBots has the experience, knowledge, and people to address our clients' most significant legal issues. For more information on BakerBots practices, please visit us at bakerbots.com. This presentation is provided by BakerBots LLP for educational and informational purposes only. It is not legal advice and is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship. under the rules of certain jurisdictions, this communication may constitute attorney advertising.